Shoo! What's up, everybody? It's another episode of The Salty Show. I'm your co-host, Timmy Two Time in the house. What's up, Salty Saul, over there in Pittsburgh? Wait, hold on a second. What? This is what's up.
Oh, shit, let me... What's going on? He did this body. Oh, yeah, we're going to switch it up. Bienvenidos al programa El Salty Show. You know why?
El Telemundo, gol! Yeah,
because apparently English causes COVID, guys. So no more English for the sake of everyone's health. Now, I'm going to have to start speaking some other language. I'm thinking about, what is that African clicking sound language? I'm going to start using that. I wonder how much COVID that split. Exactly.
I'm going to start using sign language.
Exactly. My. What a roller coaster this week. 2020. You ain't seen nothing yet. Ruth Bader Ginsburg died over the weekend. May she rest in peace. And it has set the stage for possibly one of the biggest fights for a seat for the Supreme Court. Now, if you guys remember Kavanaugh, you think those were crazy. Oof. I don't think we're prepared for what's coming. Oh, my God. Also, Joe Biden left his basement again, and as Tim just said, this time to make an appearance for the Hispanic Pandering Month, he was in Kissimmee, Florida, but he elicited more face palms than claps. We'll tell you about that. And if we do have time, we'll talk about the Netflix new propaganda called Social Dilemma. They cover the addictive qualities of social media, how algorithms are creating zombies and militant right extremists, apparently, all that and more on this episode of The Salty Show. Yeah, boy.
I just realized something. Did you?
What?
We survived. We survived the Biden finger snap today. Oh, the 200 million people dead
yes.
that were about to die Thanos. After he spoke. I was like, no, it's the Biden snap, okay?
I was like, did
I miss the memo on this or something like that?
Exactly.
Did we miss the memo on that? I mean, come on. This guy, before we get going, this guy is not mentally there. He's done. He's done, folks.
Mr. Corn
like Pop. Trump said yesterday at his rally, they gave him a shot in the ass and he got up and spoke. You know what I mean?
Ladies and gentlemen, just FYI, we are missing Heidi and Jeremy this week. Where are they? They're in Illinois somewhere.
They're in Hee-Haw, Illinois.
Out at a wedding, and they couldn't make it, so they will be joining us next week. So for all you Heidi Jeremy fans out there, we apologize, but they'll be back next week. Me and Tim are going to hold it down here. And let's get to it, Tim, man. I mean, unless you want to cover something before we get into it, I think we need to get it right into the
RBG. We got to jump right into it. Right, nobody gives a shit about the news right now.
Now, so RBG, like we said, she passed over the weekend, and, you know, we knew this was coming. It was, you know, she's been fighting cancer for quite some time now. And honestly, a lot of people were surprised that she held on this long. Now, Trump finds out, and he was out in, where was he?
Minnesota.
And so he gets the news, and I liked his reaction because obviously this is the first time he's hearing it. And honestly, like when you watch this video, it's as if it was cued. Like it's weird. The music starts playing right at the right time. The song that plays, but I'm gonna, I know you've seen it, Tim, but for the benefit of the listener, I'm gonna play this and we'll watch this, how it transpired. President Trump is getting told right after he leaves the stage, and he's getting told.
She just died? Wow. I didn't know that. I just, you're telling me now for the first time. She led an amazing life. What else can you say? She was an amazing woman. Whether you agreed or not, she was an amazing woman who led an amazing life. I'm actually sad to hear that. I am sad to hear that. Thank you very much.
You know, for a lot of people who put bad intent on this guy, that he's, you know, they call him everything under the sun, man. And, you know, that reaction, in my opinion, is genuine, right? He's not, you know what I mean? Like, let's compare it to what everybody else did, and we will. right? Because we know what everybody else tweeted. But again, I just wanted to highlight, you know what I mean? Like, this again is Raw, his reaction as it happened. Now, before the body was cold, again, you had Democrats threatening riots. And a lot of people came out saying, well, as opposed to what, Democrats, peaceful protests? You know what I mean? Like, how is this going to be different than what we've been seeing? You know what I mean? But
what they admitted, what a lot of, you know, the blue checks admitted, you know, they're like, we're going to riot. So, so they finally actually admitted to rioting finally. So they're kind of putting themselves in a bad place, you know, and to your point, right? You know, the body wasn't even, the body was still warm. Yeah. And you know who I'm really disappointed in? And it's amazing. Chuck Schumer. Okay. I don't know if that's going to be one of the tweets, but this guy tweeted out first saying, please make sure, you know, they better not elect, you know, they better not do in a conference, you know, don't confirm anyone. You know, let the people need to be the ones to decide the next Supreme Court judge.
Yeah.
And then 8 minutes later, he puts out, you know, we're here, you know, we want to mourn the passing of our, you know, Ruth Bader. And I'm like, that should have been the first tweet.
Exactly.
Not about setting the stage for war. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and like, I question whether or not that was probably one of his staffers says, well, maybe you should have tweeted this first, or maybe the staffer, I don't know. There was some miscommunication there, but yeah, you're right. I mean, that was in poor taste, you know, tweeting out, oh, we need to, you know, fight. And then all of a sudden, you know, oh, by the way, she's dead. And here am I. Yeah, no, come on, man. Now, I understand why they're freaking out, because the stakes are high, right, for this election. And if rumors are true, then no one knew this better than Ruth Bader Ginsburg herself, according to the left, because according to them, her dying wish was that the country wait until after the elections to replace her. Now, I don't believe those were her dying wishes. I really don't. And if so, then she had a real misunderstanding of what her role is as a Supreme Court justice, right? It wasn't her seat. A lot of people have come out and said this, and it's true. It needs to be said. She was privileged to sit there, and she should have known the importance of that role and how important it would be that the president fill it relatively quickly, especially at a time like this where there's so much volatility in the country. Now, here's another thing that I want to say. If those really were her wishes, again, I don't believe it, but if those really were like her last wishes, then she's the partisan hack that everybody suspected that she is, right? And the court will be better off without her. God rest her soul, but we need to speak the truth, guys. I mean, and you know, to hold such a high seat and say, oh, well, my wishes are... What?
The Constitution does not say, you know, in an election year, and if somebody's dying wishes say to do... No. The Constitution is explicit. Right. It explicitly says the president nominates, the Senate confirms. Okay, you have a Republican president and a Republican majority in the Senate. This is what we elected them to do. Sorry, guys, I don't care about her dying last wishes. The reason why you care about her dying last wishes is because if you're trying to do mail-in ballots and get all these lawyers to take it up to the Supreme Court to judge, now you have a 4-4 split. Okay, Justice Roberts always been leaning to the left a little bit. So now in a 4-4 split, it's actually 3-4, in my opinion. Okay. It's a 3-4. Now you take a 3-4 split, but we get our nomination in there before November, before the election. Now we have a 6-3. Even if Justice Roberts decides to lean with the left to try to do this coup, what they're trying to do with this mail-in ballot stuff. Oh no, we have 5-4. We have 5-4. We have a level playing field now because you're trying to steal the election. Right. And it shouldn't even be based on stealing the election. This is civics. People are throwing civics out the window with this, saying, oh, the gloves are off if they do it. No, bitch. This is their job. Yeah. This is their job as elected officials. This is why we elected them. I'm sorry.
Well, think about it. You brought this up, Tim. You know, let's say it is a 4-4 split. Right. And some, you know, the election is challenged. It's a 4-4 split. The election is challenged. Trump is still president. Now, the court can't be split. That's why there's always been nine judges, so that there's a decision made. Now you're telling me that Trump will then appoint somebody, and then that person's going to break the tie, right? If the elections are challenged and it goes to the Supreme Court, can you imagine how this sets the country up badly? People won't trust the process. Yeah. People, if they don't trust the process now, it'll be even worse at that, if that were to happen. So he needs to do it now before the elections. That way there's a judge there before the elections, because they're going to say, oh my God, you know, he appointed somebody there who was going to side with him. And you know what I mean? Like, they're going to say it now, but you know, I think if it happens after the elections, it's just going to muddy the waters, man. Now, I do want to say this, that again, going back to if these were her last wishes, she didn't own that seat. Right. She didn't own that.
It's a people seat.
Exactly. And it's not for hers to bequeath as if it's some type of inheritance. You know what I mean? This angers me. And you see, you have people like AOC tweeting out and talking on the drunk on their having drunk live casting, talking about how this was a woman's dying wish and we're not going to. The Constitution, and I tweeted this out, the Constitution is not the Make-A-Wish Foundation, folks. I mean, this is not what this is. And it's not her right, for this. This is clear in the Constitution that Trump, the president, has that right to nominate, and the Senate then confirms. It's clear. Now, I do want to mention this, because this goes, what the Democrats are feeling right now are repercussions on bad decisions that they made. And it's also their arrogance. Let me clarify that, because if you remember, back in 2016, they were so confident that Hillary Clinton was going to win. And in their minds, think this through. Think how the left thinks, right? Because they're all about optics. So here is the new president, Hillary Clinton, because again, they thought she was going to win. And then now RBG retires. And now the new woman president, you know, will nominate another woman to replace, you know, the woman judge. Again, it's all about optics with the Dems. And they calculated this really bad. They weren't counting on Trump winning. And I'm going to say this, you know, to every conservative, to every middle of the road folk, you know, we're in a war here to save our country. You know, a lot of people, both sides view it this way. And now you're telling me we have to pause to fulfill, if it's true, the selfish dying wishes of a far left Supreme Court justice? Sorry, folks. I'm not sorry to say this, but this is a goddamn truth. I don't believe she said that, but liberals are so adamant that these were her dying wishes and now we must abide by her dying. This is not how this works, folks. Yeah. Elections have consequences.
Yeah, last I checked, when I took civics, and even when you research this stuff, this feelings is not what the Constitution's about. Constitution is the law of the land. The law of the land says this is how it is. There's no precedent. Just because Mitch McConnell did not want to do it in 2016 because it was a Democratic president with a Republican majority. Sorry. Yep. You know, and when Barack Obama asked RBG to retire, you know, so that he can put somebody in there, because that would have went through. He would have been able to do that. She said no. I think she's like, well, Clinton put me in there. I want to retire with a Clinton or something like that. You know what I mean? somebody was saying something like that. I, she did not want to do it. And they were pissed at her for not retiring. They asked her to, because she was being stubborn. You know what I'm saying? So I have no sympathy. And then they want to bitch about this filibuster. Harry Reid started this. So thank you, Harry Reid.
Oh, we'll talk about that.
And Mitch McConnell.
We're going to describe
when McConnell was the. Okay.
We're going to break it down at what they're trying to do. Now, one more thing about, you know, because Merrick Garland, which was a Supreme Court nomination that Obama tried to bring in the 2016 election, he tries to bring in Merrick Garland to get nominated. This is, again, now he's a lame duck president, right? He's at the end of it. He can't run again. And you got a Senate majority Republican, right? They weren't going to pass through. But here is when Ruth Bader Ginsburg was asked about Merrick Garland's nomination to the Supreme Court, and the Republicans were holding it up. These are her words, right? This is the words of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. That's their job. There's nothing in the Constitution that says the president stops being president in his last year. So she was encouraging Obama to nominate a Supreme Court justice in his last year as he's a lame duck, and then the Senate controls, you know, so again, this is why I don't believe these are her dying wishes, because then she's contradicting herself here by saying that Trump should wait until after. No. The President Trump is not done being president. In fact, he's going to be president for another 4 years. So no, I'm sorry. Now, you said it. Obama himself nominated, you know, you brought Obama. Now, Antonin Scalia, you remember what happened when he passed away, right? And, you know, it was the last year again of the presidency. This is when he nominated Merrick Garland. And I'm sure Antonin Scalia would have wished that a conservative replace him in that seat, right? Now, Democrats say the dying wishes of RBG, as if it's supposed to elicit some type of logic. It doesn't. It's all emotional, guys. This is not logical. Do not appeal to my emotions on this stuff. Guys, the country is far more important than to, oh, well, you know, feelings. No. And you know what?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No. I was going to say, I love how everybody says the people should be the ones deciding this. That's not how this works. The people don't decide the judge. They don't. You think, okay, so let's say we don't nominate, right? We don't do no nomination, no confirmation. Okay. We go into 2021. Biden wins. Is Biden going to listen to the Republican side of, are we going to have a say in the people? No. Stop. Stop the bullshit. You already know what they want to do. So stop. They're already planning on that. They're winning and that they're going to stack the court and that they're going to create 12 Supreme Court justices. Stop the bullshit. Stop.
No, but you know what? It, to a certain extent, I get what they're saying, right? Because they're saying that it should be the people's choice by proxy through the senators and the Congress and then the president that they choose. I get it. However, the people
chose the
guys.
Senate and the president.
Exactly. Yeah. The people already voted. So this is the people's choice. Now, I'm going to bring this up because, again, it's setting the stage for war. And I think Trump is going to either nominate Monday or Tuesday. And we'll talk about who he might nominate because her name's been brought up multiple times. Now, if you guys remember the last nomination, Brett Kavanaugh, this should be the Republicans' rallying cry. Remember Kavanaugh. This should be it. Because remember everything that the Democrats did to that man and his family. In my opinion, they forfeited the right to any long-standing traditions in the nomination of a judge the day they did that to that man. And weak ass Republicans like Romney and Collins, all those fools, need to understand that the rules of formality and decorum have long been erased by these sleazy politician Democrats. They were, because they ruined this man's life. Like the man was crying, dude. Everything that they did about rape gangs and what the fuck? Remember, we got to remember this, guys, because that's what they dragged this man's name through the mud. And so this is war, ladies and gentlemen. And it's time to put on your fighting boots because it's coming, man. Like if you thought that Kavanaugh hearings were crazy, it's about to get worse. And I'm going to bring it up, unless you wanted to mention something else, Tim. I'm going to bring up that whole filibuster nonsense and everything that's been happening and what we're about to see. So the Democrats got rid of the filibuster, right, for federal judges. You guys remember this. And for those of you who don't, we're going to break it down here. Now, one thing that the Republicans said at that time is they said, folks, you're going to rue the day that you did away with the filibuster for judges. Well, guess what, Democrats? That day is today. And I like that quote from Man on Fire. Revenge is a meal best served cold. Now, I'm going to show you this video. Actually, this is a tweet. I'm going to read this tweet from Harry Reid back in 2013 when Harry Reid was the Senate Majority Leader and in charge of confirming, you know, judicial appointments by the president. Now, this is a tweet. I'm reading it. And he said, thanks to all of you who encouraged me to consider filibuster reform, it has to be done. Now, what was he talking about, filibuster reform? So, Reid took away what was a 60-vote majority requirement to approve a Supreme Court judge if there was filibusters, right? Because the minority had the opportunity to filibuster and basically run the clock down. So in order to end that filibuster, the majority had to get 60 votes. In other words, they had to persuade people from the other side to end the filibuster. Now, what tangled webs we have weaved, Democrats, or what goes around comes around. I saw all these. The chickens have come home to roost. Karma is a bitch, right? Now, let's paint to you guys what happened. Let's go back to the early 2000s when Bush was president. The Democrats tried to filibuster every one of Bush's nominees, right? Yeah. Now, the way that the Republicans got around this, again, as I mentioned, it was having a 60-vote majority to end their filibuster. Well, Democrats then got into power, and the Republican minority filibustered all of Obama's nominees. The Democrats hated that, right? And so what did they do? Right? They hated the precedent that they had set. And Harry Reid, the majority leader, as I just read, did away with the 60-vote majority required to end the filibuster. So now they could approve their judges and Republicans couldn't filibuster. They called it the nuclear option, folks. Go look this up. So this brings us to today, where there is no longer any 60-vote majority and there is no longer filibuster. And now the Democrats are flailing their arms in panic for what they created. Now, there is a biblical verse that I love about this that summarizes this very perfectly. And it's Proverbs 26:27. And it's this: if you set a trap for others, you will get caught in it yourself. Or if you roll a boulder down on others, it will crush you instead. So congratulations, Democrats. You played yourselves. And this is the reality of what's happened. But every time it's like, oh my God, change the rules. We got to change the rules. No, this is not tradition. On we have to. What the fuck? Yeah. Get the fuck out of here. I'm so done with this, man. Like, but
no, I'm going to say there's things about this that I love, right? Because they shot their shot, right?
Yeah.
And it seems every time they come up with instead of doing what's right, they do what's political, right? What's a good political game for them. Okay, so they get caught in a web. They cause these problems. Then it gets done to them. They don't like it. Then they change the rules. It's good for them. Cool. Now, well, it's right back. You reap what you sow. And that's exactly why I'm glad. Even though Lindsey Graham did come out last year and said, you record my words, blah, 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 I will not support a nomination. But I think after what happened with Kavanaugh,
it's changed.
The state of,
you're right.
Yes. And the state of everything going on right now with all this crossfire hurricane. Plus, he's covering his ass. He's covering his ass because with the dossier, you know, because that was a McCain thing. He kind of was, you know, part of that a little bit. So I think he's making, you know, he's got no choice. He's in a tight election.
He's up for re-election. For re-election. He needs re-election. He's not going to win if he doesn't.
And it's tight. It's basically tied. He might be leading by 1 or 2 points, you know, give or take, but it's a close race. If he does not nominate South Carolina, he can kiss that seat goodbye. So right now he's playing politics. You know what? I'm glad they got to get it done quick, because here's the deal. If Martha McSally loses and we lose that seat to Kelly can stop that nomination, mm-hmm. because he can get sworn in like the next day. So look, you can get it. People are saying, 29 judges that during presidential, some people like Ruth Bader Ginsburg got in like 26 days or something like that in an election year.
Yep, exactly.
So it can be done. Get it done. Mike Pence, as long as all Republicans minus the three rhinos that aren't going to vote, I think the Democrat senator from West Virginia came out last night and said he would support the nomination.
Manchin? What was it?
Manchin. Yeah, it's Manchin. Yeah, he came out and supported. I was like, whoa, okay. So you might see some defections from the Democrats as well, because
I think we will.
Because some of them are trying to hold on to their seats as well, because they're going, I'm not progressive like that. You know, you're starting to see it kind of the cracks in the wall. So, but yeah, we gotta get this confirmed. We gotta get it confirmed. Mike Pence is the 51, done.
Right. Trump said multiple times that he would nominate someone very quickly in from his tweets over the weekend. Mm-hmm. It sounds like his and Mitch McConnell also tweeted, and it sounds like they're going to move pretty quickly to approve somebody. Now, here's my question to Democrats again, who are in shock and like, oh my God, we can't believe the politics. you think they wouldn't do this? You know,
you
think the Democrats, they would. Obama tried this in 2016 when he was again. We're going back to, Merrick Garland.
They're already talking about impeaching Kavanaugh if they win.
Exactly.
But how do you, what are you going to start impeaching every judge that he did? Stop. You can't, like, that's wrong. That's an appointment. You don't do that. What did he do wrong?
They just hated the guy. They hated how he had ruled. Now, they dragged him in. Again, in the mud, this guy, his reputation. So for me, formalities and decorum, that's great and all. When both sides play by these rules, but the other side doesn't. So for the sake of the country, Trump needs to put in there somebody stat. Now, can you imagine if the elections, again, we've said this, ended in a 4-4 tie with the Supreme Court. It's not a good picture, guys. We don't want to say now when you brought it up, who was that who tweeted that? And I was like, this is a brilliant tweet. Posobiec, he tweeted that, man. And I was like, oh my God, this is such a great point because, you have a 4-4 and the elections are being challenged. And now Trump, this is not good to be in a good position to be in as a country. I mean, you talk about, talking about riots and distrust in our form of government. This would set us spiraling really quickly into that. I don't think it's a good idea. And that's why I say put somebody in there very quickly. Yeah.
Well, and the reason why they're also freaking out, because if they put him in real quick, they can contest the two rulings in Michigan and Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania is already saying they're going to take their ruling on 3 days after the election or a week, and they're taking it to the Supreme Court. So Michigan said up to 2 weeks, they can count those ballots. So they want to take them to the Supreme Court. So they're already trying to, these Democrat states, they're trying to change the rules for voting. And now that the Republic, they're trying to take it to the Supreme Court. That seat is huge, huge on that, because if they go up and they go, all right, like 3 days before the election, let's say he gets confirmed, he's in, they challenge it. They go, no, all those have to be counted that night. Well, we can't. Sorry. Done. Rule the land.
Now, and I tweeted you this. I messaged you this. And this is another reason why the Republicans, conservatives, should do it very fairly quickly. Because, and we're starting already to see it. We're seeing it happen because I stopped seeing COVID tweets.
COVID's out the window. COVID's done.
We're putting the spotlight on this nomination. The media is now being forced to cover it. You take away from the riots, you take away from COVID, life can go back to semi-normal. I can go out and drink at a bar again, for fuck's sake, man. And in the end, this might be good for Democrats. This is my theory. This might be good for them because this is what I see happening. Like you just mentioned, there are some Democrats who have level heads and be like, you know what? I'm going to vote for the guy, Why not? I mean, it's not like there's nothing wrong with this guy. We just don't agree with him politically, but that's not a reason not to vote for the guy. Elections have consequences. So what will happen is that they're going to turn against each other, right? Those who don't vote the party line, with the nomination, they're going to be outcast. And it's just going to create something where the party will be in disarray. And this may be good for them because it may pull them back to the center. Because right now, the Democrats have lost a lot of people, traditional liberals. They've lost them. And so, silver linings in this whole thing, it could be a good thing. We'll see how this plays out. But something to note that, like you said, Tim, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was approved within 45 days, right? And here are some facts that when I was looking, researching this, because, obviously it came out and everybody's like, oh my God, we can't. Well, let's see how it's happened in the past. Okay. And I saw this article that talked about out of the 29 times that there has been a vacancy in the SCOTUS, all 29 presidents at that time nominated a judge. Right. Out of the 29 times that there had been a vacancy, right? All 29 times the president at the time nominated a judge. So history is technically on the Republican side here, right? This is what the article says in National Review. History is on the side of Republicans filling a Supreme Court vacancy in 2020. Now I'm going to read to you a paragraph that the one that I that is poignant to this point, which is this. Hold on. All right, so here it is. It says history supports Republicans filling the seat. Doing so would not be in any way inconsistent with Senate Republicans holding open the seat vacated by Justice Antonin Scalia in 2016. The reason is simple and was explained by Mitch McConnell at that time. Historically, throughout American history, when their party controls the Senate, the president gets to fill Supreme Court vacancies at any time, even in a presidential election year. Even in a lame duck session after the election, even after defeat. Historically, when the opposite party controls the Senate gets to block Supreme Court nominees sent up in presidential election year and hold the seat open for the winner. Both of these precedents are settled by experience as old as the Republic. Republicans should not create a brand new precedent to deviate from them, right? So again, exactly. History is on our side, and Democrats talking about, oh my God, this has never been done. No, shove it. You're lying, you know? And to Mitt Romney and Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, Susan Collins, you know, who's up for re-election in May.
She mm-hmm. should vote.
They better
she
vote.
She should, because that might save her.
Exactly.
That might save Susan Collins.
Bro, now, Susan Collins, something that she tweeted just boiled my blood because, bro, can you, she loves attention. I hate when people are not clear. And what are you going to do? Now, she sends out a statement, right, about, you know, about this whole thing, right? And she's a crucial vote because nobody knows how she's going to vote, but I think that's what she wants. And I'm like, bro, you're the fucking, God damn it, like a wobbly noodle. Let me read this to you. This is her statement, okay? Again, Susan Collins up for re-election in Maine. This is what she tweeted. In order for the American people to have faith in their elected officials, we must act fairly and consistently. No matter which political party is in power, President Trump has constitutional authority to make a nomination to fill Supreme Court vacancy, and I would have no objection to the Senate Judiciary Committee's beginning the process of reviewing his nominee's credentials. Next paragraph. Given the proximity of the presidential election, however, I do not believe that the Senate should vote on the nominee prior to the election. In fairness to the American people who will either be reelecting the president or selecting a new one, the decision on a lifetime appointment to the Supreme Court should be made by the president who is elected on November 3rd. So she wants the president to nominate, but she doesn't want the Senate to vote. The Senate was going to vote.
She's playing both sides.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah. She knows that so they're going to vote, but annoying. She's basically saying if they vote, I'm going to vote, obviously, but I'm just saying that, you know, this is where I stand. She's playing the middle. She's playing
exactly.
the middle.
Ground.
She's
it's not. Just, so annoying.
She should have never tweeted that. She should have never tweeted
just,
that.
Just keep your mouth shut.
Yeah. But you know what I have a problem with?
Yeah.
You know what I have a problem with? Where negative Nancy, you know, who didn't remember that, you know, she didn't remember today was Sunday, apparently, in her quiver, arrows in her quivers. they're talking about impeaching the guy again to block
bro
this sorry
stop it
I'm done
stop it.
What are you gonna impeach him on? What grounds do you have to
nothing.
So now we're gonna set a new precedent of impeaching a president during an election year. Like, you already did it once, so a month out, okay, guess what, that dude, you're obstruction, you're getting in the way. Michael Moore should go to jail. He tweeted out Nancy Pelosi should shut down the government so to stop Trump from doing. He's the president of the fucking United States.
What?
You know what he's going to do? He's nobody. You can't stop the president, number one. As you know, they're not going to stop him.
No.
And you think Trump's going to be like, even if it was your last dying wish, do you think Trump's gonna be like, no, stop it. Stop right. it. You're just trying to rally up your base so that they go to Mitch McConnell's house, which they did yesterday in the middle of the morning. A video just came out from the Sunrise Movement. They got leaked and they actually had to tell them to shut up. They were training people how to be agitators because they want to go to Lindsey Graham's house in the morning and wow. at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
And, oh, yeah. Caught on video.
I haven't
Billy
seen
Weaver
that.
Caught the video, man. Wow. Billy Weaver just leaked it, dude.
Wow.
Sunrise Movement. Oh, who's behind the Sunrise Movement? Oh, yeah.
George Soros, maybe? Who funds these people? That's the thing you got to ask yourself.
Yeah, but
man.
The Sunrise Movement is one of Chuck Schumer's big packs.
Okay.
Talking
about Chuck Schumer, I want to show you a tweet from this guy. This isn't back in 2016. Oh, yeah, 2016. And I retweeted this because I liked it. This is Chuck Schumer in 2016, again, when President Obama, in his lame duck year, right? He was out the next year. He nominated somebody to replace Antonin Scalia's seat. And the Senate at that time, was it Mitch McConnell? Said, yeah, I'm not gonna even vote for this. And they were so angry that the Senate was not gonna vote. Now, this is what Chuck Schumer, Chucky, New York, man, says. No Supreme Court shutdown. And he's telling the Senate to do their job, meaning vote on who the president has nominated. And the Senate said, we're not even going to listen to it, you know, because they have that authority. They have, you know, this is they're nowhere in the Constitution does it say, oh, the Senate can't vote or the president shouldn't nominate. Nowhere. It doesn't say it. I mean, all these, you know, branches are abiding by their constitutional authority. The president should be able to nominate. Why not? The Senate can vote on it or not. I mean, this is the and to talk about, oh, this is unprecedented. No. You know, out of the 29 that have happened, 29 have nominated. And out of every single one, if the Senate of the opposing party was in charge, they didn't vote on it or they voted against it. So eat shit. I was gonna show you this one. Okay, again, this is Obama in 2016. Let's hear it from the horse's mouth. What in 2016?
I'm Obama.
What he said
about what is supposed to happen now, when there is a vacancy on the Supreme Court, the President of the United States is to nominate someone.
Nah, what?
The Senate is to consider that nomination.
What?
And
Obama, stop. You're going to lose your base, Obama. Stop it.
So he did. So he nominated.
Exactly.
And Mitch McConnell decided not to vote on it. So they did their jobs.
They did the jobs.
It's not like Obama didn't nominate somebody.
Right.
He did his part. The Senate decided, we're not going to do that. So they did their job. They just voted no.
Which is whatever. That's how elections have consequences, folks. When you choose a Senate on the opposing party as the majority and you choose a president, you're going to have this disagreement and you're going to just have maybe some gridlock when it comes to making choices. And this is on the American people. This is how they're voting. Now, I'm going to move on now to pivot a little bit. And because the question now becomes, who replaces Ruth Bader Ginsburg? Who replaces her? Right now, Trump just tweeted that he's going to nominate a woman. He said it.
Mm-hmm.
He said the next one I'm going to nominate is a woman. Now, based on what he's done in the past, I think we already know who he's going to nominate. But before we get to that, do you know who is on the list, on his short list of potential nominees? That would would be hilarious if he were to put this person. He's not. I was speculating this before he had tweeted the whole it's going to be a woman, but Ted Cruz.
Oh, yeah. Because he just recently updated it. So I know Cruz was on there. I think Cotton was on there.
Yeah.
But I think he put it on there for the next replacements because, you know, apparently SCOTUS Gate. I mean, technically, we are living SCOTUS Gate now. You predicted SCOTUS Gate.
But everybody
go to his Chief Justice Roberts.
Think about the potential happening. This is unprecedented because if you think about it, this is just his first for first 4 years. And the guy's going to win, right? He's going to win. Unless there's whatever, but he's going to win. Now, he's already nominated 3 Supreme Court justices. Now, who's next? Breyer, who's also the other old, Clarence Thomas is also there. And these guys are about to, so Trump could nominate potentially 5 Supreme Court justices, man. they're waiting for it. But again, this is a product of Harry Reid when he used a nuclear option. You know, Democrats, this is your doing. You know, the reason Trump has all these, he's able to do all this is because of things that you guys did.
Yeah, he's not cheating. You know? He's not cheating by no means. He's not doing anything. They're following everything, the letter of the law, and following every precedent and every, you know, not precedent, but just following every step that is supposed to happen.
Right.
He nominates, they vote, and if they have majority, they don't need you. You don't have, you know, the 60s out the door. Yeah. Mike Pence, you know, is 51, done. Maybe you get some defections from the Democrats where you don't need my, you know, Mike Pence. Guess what? Sorry, not sorry. A Republican's not going to cry if the roles were reversed. If Obama had the Senate and his presidency, yeah, they would have been upset. But guess what? It would have been in their right. I'm not going to go burn down a building.
What Republicans would have done is they would have said, well, you know what? This is not a good choice, blah, blah, blah. But they would have said, end the process, burn everything.
Yeah.
And this is what you're hearing from the other side. Stop everything. Burn cities. What? No.
Look, verified users. You know what I mean? Blue checks are calling for it, dude. Crazy. That's not a good look. Not a good look.
No,
not
man. Look. This is insane. And then has Twitter banned these people who encourage
violence? Oh, hell no.
No. No. They're like, put it. No, they probably promote their tweets. Fuck out of here. Now, let's talk about who might be the potential candidate. Now, I really like this one. And I was, you know, doing the research to prepare for the show, you know, I was watching some videos of when she, because she went, she's already gone through the whole process, you know, the Senate hearings and all that stuff. Amy Coney Barrett. Now she
ACB
right now sits in the 7th U.S. District, or was it no Court of Appeals? That's where she's sitting, and she's got a great story, man. Her and her husband, they have a fucking fabulous story. They have 7 kids, dude, and a lot of them are adopted. She is. Like, if you hear her story, man, I encourage anybody who's listening to the show, go find out who she's now. Let's go back to what the Democrats did to her, right? Because she was going to sit in the
Feinstein,
U.S. Court of
man.
Appeals.
Oof.
Yeah. Dianne Feinstein comes out and says about her, because this is what the left doesn't like, right? Oh, you have a religious person who believes and has convictions in those beliefs? Oh, we can't have that. Oh, why? Because she's Catholic and she believes, you know, in human life, and she's pro-life. She can't be in the court. And this is their golden cow, dude. This is the Democrats' golden cow, is Roe v. Wade. And this is what they're scared of, which to me is like, really? This is the hill you guys want to die on fucking Roe v. Wade, on the mass killings of black kids? This is the hill the Democrats want to die. It's disgusting, dude. I don't want to get passionate about this because I need another drink, but you know, this is the hill they want to die on, because oh, she's Catholic and she believes her religious, oh, we can't have, what in the you know, I get passionate about this because, you know, there is the potential to overturn Roe v. Wade, and when people talk about overturning Roe v. Wade, they're like, oh, the federal government can't do that. Well, no. What the federal government would be doing if they do overturn Roe v. Wade and this precedent and this, you know, because there's legal precedent on this, has been there for 40 years. It's established law that's been there for that long. However, it's based on the clause on privacy that has nothing to do with privacy. Okay, we're not going to argue that point on this episode. However, this is coming. This is a fight that's coming. And again, I'm glad that it's coming, because it's going to shed a spotlight on this thing and how it was wrong to begin with. Back when this shit passed, we didn't have the social media access that we do now. And this is going to lead into the next conversation about the demonization of social media that is now happening, because apparently people became awake during this whole COVID crisis shit, and the left doesn't like it because people went out and did their research. But I'm moving ahead of myself, but we're going to get there. Now, So the left is angry, and there's going to be a showdown in Congress on this, because this is the fight that they're scared of, is the re-litigation of Roe v. Wade. It's coming, folks. It will coming. And you're going to hear terms like stare decisis, which is legal precedent. These are legal terms that you're going to hear all over, and you're going to become so inundated with how corrupt and how unconstitutional Roe v. Wade passed. And we're going to get to there. But now, at the front and center of the debate will be this, and it's long overdue. And, you know, nationalized abortion laws, you know, they're not protected by the Constitution. It's nowhere to be found in the Constitution, folks. You know, remember, all this is going to do, if it does get overturned, is it would just send it back to the states. So if you want to, you know, if you want to do that,
and states
whatever.
Can handle it the way they want. But then they go, well, Texas is a red state, so they're very anti-abortion. In New York, you can kill, you know. My biggest fear is, but when they go put one of their dumb judges in there, if they get it, they got so far to where you could kill a baby after one, you know, a minute of it coming out.
That's,
you know,
disgusting.
I mean? They're gonna pass some dumb law where, oh, you know what? Evil. They're gonna pass the China rule. Oh,
homie,
many girls, get rid of them. They're gonna go so far extreme, you know, to where you could probably kill a 5-year-old. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't trust them. I really do not trust these guys.
We're at a crossroads.
Big crossroads.
And one of them will be, you know, because I'm going to use their simple terms, but they're clear terms. And you know, it's good and evil, dude. This is what it is. We can't speak clearer than this, folks, because let's look at where these abortion clinics are. They're not in these rich neighborhoods killing white babies.
Go to Beverly Hills and look for a
They're not
a Planned
there,
Parenthood.
Folks. Not happening. They're not there. Not They're happening. Killing minority children. And this is disgusting. And this is the reality that people don't want to face. But again, this is not an episode on that. We will cover that, because this fight is coming. If Amy Coney Barrett is a nominee for the Supreme Court, this fight is coming. And we will talk this at length. We will cover it for you guys. But I'm going to close this out by showing you guys liberal reactions. The liberals' reactions when the Ruth Bader Ginsburg died.
Before we get into the liberal reaction real quick.
Go one more.
The worst reaction, I think, and I don't know if it's part of your compilation.
I don't know.
What's her face? AOC. Okay.
Oh no.
Was
that.
AOC.
Go ahead. Because
she went out there and she sounded drunk as shit. She's like, listen to me. You guys need to radicalize. It's the last dying wish. And she's, brunch is canceled. Bitch, what the fuck does that have to do with anything? Brunch is canceled. Like, you lost your mind, you know, about this, because you're seeing that your whole platform will not work in the Supreme Court if we do this. You guys were banking. And the most disgusting thing, and this is how you know, these liberals, not all of them, but these Washington progressives are disgusting. You know why? Because you know what they all were worried, what they were really upset about? That she did not make it to 2021. That's what they were mad about. Not that she died. They're not grieving about her. No. You know why they're really crying? Because she did not make it to 2021.
Right.
That is the most disgusting thing. They don't give a shit about her. They wanted her. They knew she was going to go. But they were all hoping that she lasted until the election.
You know how
and
fake they
sorry
are?
Not-
You know how fake they are, Tim? Because RBG had two Hollywood movies made about her life. She wasn't the first. And you would think that she's the first female Supreme Court judge. No, it was Sandra Day O'Connor. Right? Arizona has some, some courts out there named after her. Sandra Day O'Connor, nominated by President Reagan. Were there any stories about her life? None.
No.
There was no Hollywood. There was a, why? Because she was a conservative. And so to liberals, women don't exist unless they're liberal. And so your outcry and your outrage, it's fake, liberals. And we're done, man. I'm telling you, man, the country is seeing right through you. And what plays a role in this is social media. the social media now that all of a sudden leftists are like, oh my God, this could be dangerous, folks, because people are getting educated. Oh, no, they're getting indoctrinated. We must come out with a documentary that talks about indoctrination in social media. And that's what we're going to move into. And I'm going to get a drink before I do, but I'm going to let you say what you want to say about that.
Let's do the compilation.
This is just actually one video. This is really going to be.
Oh, yeah, this sums it up.
This is going to be the highlight of this election, bro. This is, and for the listener, I'm sorry you can hear it, but I'm sorry you can't see it, but you'll be able to hear this girl's reaction on RBG's death. Golden.
Holy fucking shit, you guys! I'm driving your car, but I just got a notification that Ruth Bader Ginsburg died! Fuck! Could this year get any fucking worse? Ruth!
You see right there, she just said it.
I love it.
I mean, her meltdown was not about her dying. She's not upset about her dying. She's upset about her not dying in 2021.
In yeah, could you wait,
that
bitch?
That is the sick day. That's really what here's the saying. Deal. You see me say, so I started trolling. I don't care anymore. I troll on Twitter, right?
I don't care either.
When I see
Tim,
these
I'm
videos, you know what I put? Every time somebody does it, you know what I put? Why do they always look like this and sound like this?
Bro.
Even the Antifa BLM girls that, you know, the white girls that, all they do is scream with that high-pitched voice. Like, there's something wrong with them. And that social dilemma ties into all this, okay? Into what she's seeing, that's what social dilemma caused. And that's what I want to get into.
If you've heard our previous episodes, I canceled my Netflix account. However, I still, you know, have a few weeks or whatever. And it actually ends this weekend. So I'm trying to get in as much of the shows that I can before my, my subscription expires. And one of the shows that I watched was actually a new one that just came out. It's called Social Dilemma. And now, for those of you who haven't seen it and you lean right, just go in prepared knowing. I would equate it to the fall of the cabal, because similar to it, where, you know, the first portion or the first few, you know, episodes on that one were good and then the rest of it lost me. This is very similar to the Social Dilemma documentary now on Netflix, which is, you know, they set the stage for what you think is going to go one direction, and it just like goes a completely different direction, and you're like, what the hell? So again, Social Dilemma, Netflix, check it out. Now, the premise of the documentary is that the social media giants compete essentially for the attention of the consumer. Right. I don't know how else to describe it, but what they do is you got to understand how these social media platforms work. Right. You download Facebook, you download any social media platform, and it's essentially for free, or what you think is free. But in the end, it really isn't. What they're doing is that they're selling your data. They're selling all the data they've collected on your habits, and they sell it to advertisers, right? They essentially try to keep you glued to your phone. And the documentary covers how they do that, how there's groups within these organizations who their sole purpose is to drive more traffic to their platform and keep you there as long as they can. And they're going to use, now the documentary does go into the whole algorithms and how they're essentially computer AIs, you know, they into understanding your habits and curtail the content that you see based on the information that they've gathered to you. and in that way be able to sell you advertising, right? Am I summarizing this correctly, Tim? I mean, you've seen the documentary, right?
Yeah, I mean, so the biggest, I mean, basically the biggest analogy, and it was actually one of the most, I'm going to, you know, she, I forget the lady's name. I'm terrible with names, but one of the ladies that was really big into the, you know, she worked Facebook and all them.
Yeah.
She's basically like, we trade pork bellies on the, you know, pork belly exchange, yep. You know, how we sell different things.
Yep.
Humans, basically humans are now a commodity, right? When I say humans, they're not like trading, you know, you physically, but they're trading everything about you, right? So like the telephone company, they have all this data on you because they're recording your calls. But there's so many legalities behind this that protects anybody from getting that information, right? Because your conversations are private. Mm-hmm. With this, with social media, with them being able to get all your information through Facebook, the likes, your pictures, you know, your GPS and your phone, everything is being collected. Ever since, you know, mobile started, right, with the invention of the smartphone, iPhones, Palm Pre's, all that, they've been harvesting all your data,
right,
and not selling it to third companies, but allowing them access to the data, right? Because they know that that is a major commodity. So if they want targeted, I mean, how many times have we had conversations at Santeezy's or any bar and we're like, oh, you know, we talk about some random shit and all of a sudden, like, you look at your phone, you're like, the first advertisement I see in like Facebook or, you know, Twitter is like for whatever you were talking about, or even your Google searches automatically come up with that, you know?
Right.
So there's definitely a lot of the harvesting of data, but it's also about how they are allowing the disinformation. They cannot control the disinformation. So through this social dilemma, it is creating division through disinformation. And it's all playing out right now in front of our eyes. We see it every day.
Let me ask you, Tim.
That was one of the big key things.
Before we go further into it, let me ask you this. Was there any point, similar to the fall of the cabal, was there any point in the documentary where it lost you and you're like, okay, now you're just leftist propaganda?
So I think I would tune that out due to the fact of I was more concerned about the algorithms and some of the, and the conversations of the whatchamacallit, the engineers and the VP, the former VPs of Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and all that. So I didn't. So the part, you know, the only leftist part was like they were showing a lot of like how that kid got manipulated to go join like Antifa, you know, but I took it as that was like an Antifa protest, not a right wing protest.
See,
but okay, I
did too. But we'll talk about that. But so let me elaborate on this. Let me ask you this question. So we know
there was some leftist propaganda in there.
Okay,
it was. I don't remember exactly the statements, but I was like, ah.
Well. So we know that Netflix is a leftist organization. Again, this is one of the reasons why I've ended my subscription to Netflix. So we know this. Now, my question to you is: do you think a leftist organization like Netflix would roll out a video that was going to put leftism or leftist movements, social movements, in a bad light? Do you acknowledge that they would never do that?
So it's interesting because I was, as I'm watching the movie, because I was telling my buddy about this, because these are conversations, deep conversations that I've had for years with one of my other buddies, right? Because he never got into the social media thing because he didn't, you know, like, it was like, this is too invasive, right? And it's very addicting.
Okay.
So in a way, I feel that it did go against the grain because it basically said like social media is bad. Like that's what I got. Like it was basically saying like this is definitely
did you watch it till the end?
In our society.
Did you watch it till the end? Okay. Now, so let me ask you then a question because I look at any tool. Can be used for good or bad. Okay. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think that social media has played a role in what's potentially going to be a re-election of Donald Trump?
Yes. I mean, we know that it's played, it's been playing a part in our elections since 2010, since the event, since mobile blew up and everybody started getting smartphones and they were starting to able to, they even admitted in the thing, they go, we 100% got involved in elections. Those engineers and VPs said, they admitted that this wound up a lot, like they go, the midterms, they go, we manipulate, they even basically said, like, we were heavily involved in the 2018 midterms by the, some of the things they were doing with disinformation or targeting, you know, because everybody's paying. So they even said Russia, you know, like with their targeted ads, they go, they didn't do anything illegal. They just paid for the data, to use that data.
My questions aren't to put you in a thing. My questions are honestly for clarity on where, how the documentary, how you perceive the documentary. So I have one more question, or maybe more, but the next question. Do you think that social media is a net for good, or is it a net for bad? In other words, if we were to balance out the pros and the cons of social media, do you think it's been net good or net bad?
I think so. It's been net good and net bad, and I'm going to explain why.
No, but because net if it's good, a scale, because
no, 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 scale. No. I'm going to explain.
Okay.
So the net good is I'm able to stay in contact with friends and family that I haven't seen, you know, that I don't get to see all the time. You get to see, you know, videos of kids growing up, and you could do the Facebook Messenger videos and everything like that. But now the bad is that addictive side, to where you're starting to see, you see people's true colors because they don't know how to deal with this phone. Like I call it, you know, the addiction to social media and your cell phone is to me like it's a beta person, right? They need that validation. You are seeing people's true colors of, you know, when you take that selfie and you need that validation, because remember that one part when they were talking about with that, when the kid was sitting in her bed and she took that selfie with the filters and she saw she only had 2 likes. She deleted it because she wasn't getting the validation that she wanted. So that's the dangerous side of social media.
So
it is tapping into people's brains that are let me
ask you this. Okay. Cause I know where you're going at, and but the examples that you're setting is already for minors who are not mentally developed or not
even emotionally.
Well, but let me ask you this. So if we were to take that, the minor, because to me, that's parenting. To me, that's the failure of parents to establish rules on to when their kids can do it. Now, if we eliminate that, okay, the bad parenting, and just from an adult perspective, okay, adults who use these platforms, and I'm not even going to say responsibly, but adults who use this platform, do you think that it has been a net good or a net bad?
Oh, it's net bad. Net bad.
Really? Okay. So in what, where do you say net? So, why is it net bad?
So again, you know, we joke, you know, me and my cousins, we call it, you know, when everybody takes the love me photos, not the children, but the adults, when the adults are looking for that validation on the likes and clicks, when you're out with friends and they got to take the same shot 15 different times to put filters on it and get the right one to put on Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, you know, their story, they got to doctor every little thing. They got to put the filters on it. I mean, even down to dating. We use social media for dating. And how many times have you been catfished based on people using filters? We've had a whole show about being, you know, so. Well,
but okay, hold on.
People are hiding behind themselves.
What I'm trying to get at is, I think social media has only augmented problems in society that have existed long before social media. Okay. And maybe we can say it's a problem. Maybe we can say it's just a character of just being social humans, right? Because even if we remove the social media aspect of it, right? Let's go back even before the advent of technology, you know, in a town, and you had women when the advent of makeup came around, and you had women now, you know, because this shit happened. I mean, this is, People try to present the best part of themselves to society. Society approval has always been a human condition. It is that herd mentality, is the survival. This is human nature. And one of the things that I did like about the documentary is that it highlighted this, and this is true, is that we're, in essence, we have primitive portions in our brain that look for this, right? And look for this approval. And maybe we're getting it at a higher rate quicker than before. However, this is not a new problem of humans looking for approval from a social community. This has happened for the history of humanity. This is not new. So all I'm saying is that I believe social media maybe has highlighted it and has presented it in an augmented state. I'll acknowledge that. But honestly, I'm from the side of social media is a double-edged sword. And I'll expound on that. But what I want to get at is that if you don't use it correctly, it'll be to your detriment. So you have to be wise in the way that you use it. However, if you do use it, and if human beings are now becoming more informed with more information readily available at their fingertips, in other words, let's look at the algorithm of all algorithms, which is TikTok, right? Because this is what the battle is right now. TikTok has done something unique and different than a lot of other social media platforms just based on the exponential growth that it has had. It has. There's no denying it. So what did TikTok do that has highlighted this biological, whether we wanted to call it a flaw or an instinct of survival within human beings? And it is this. So you get on TikTok, then you post something, and then 1,000 people like it. And then those 1,000 people now contribute to the algorithm, and this message expounds. What I want to say is that I feel, and we've talked about this on the show, that COVID-19 only, what is it, fast track this whole thing. Because you told people stay at home and twiddle your thumbs. So what did people do? People went on social media. Because what else could you do? Right? You couldn't go nowhere. If you were outside, you were going to be wearing a mask. If you were going to go in public, you're going to be wearing a mask. You know what I mean? Go ahead.
And I was going to say, and social media was the only way to actually see your network, because you basically were told, like, if you go to somebody's house, you might kill them. And you're like,
but
so I got to see them through this lens.
And so, but what ended up happening was that now these algorithms are working in full time, and you're sitting at home, and the more you like, and the more you swipe, the more you comment, the more content is now, you know, the social media giants couldn't have asked for anything better than the lockdowns, because it forced people to be on their platforms. This is the truth. And so this is another question that you got to ask yourself is, now, if the boogeyman is these big corporations and Democrats are the ones calling for more lockdowns, you're only contributing to this boogeyman theory. You are, Democrats. You really are. However, I am from the position of, again, it's a double-edged sword. You can use it for good and you can use it for bad. You know what I mean? Like, and to me, there's something that the documentary didn't cover. And this needs to be said, dude. Because we as a society have moved away from something, and it's been recent, in the last 30, 40 years. We've moved as a society and said morality lies within ourselves. We have. We did move into this direction. We said, no, we don't need God. We don't need these principles. Goodness is within your heart. And I think we're finding out that it really isn't. I think we're finding out that our hearts deceive us. And this is why you're seeing a skyrocket in suicide rates and all this and all that. And we'll expound on that. But this is my theory. is that bad parenting based on bad upbringing, and it's a cycle, has led to this. Because if you had good parents who told their kids, no, 14-year-old, you're not going to be on social media because you are not mentally prepared for this. Let your character grow and you be a child and et cetera, then you can get on the social media once you have at least a level of maturity to be able to understand what's going on, or at least build your confidence to a level where you will be able to persevere the onslaught of, you know, because we all know what happens on social media. Go ahead.
So I'm going to counter that, right? Because you got to remember, we are the generation of the rotary phone and playing manhunt in the streets, to also the evolution of AOL Instant Messenger. The first social media website, if you really want to think about it, was the chat room, Prodigy chat rooms, the Mindspring chat rooms. But then they did AIM, AOL Instant Messenger.
Yep.
That shit took off. I remember being in high school and all my friends were like, oh my God, we got a can you AIM tonight? Like, it was like a big thing, being able to instant message somebody without being on the phone. So technically we did have that instant message. We had that. We were the beginning stages of that. So our parents were okay with that because we were just chatting one-on-one. Then they added the group chat in AOL. You know what I mean?
Mm.
If Facebook, MySpace, Friendster, Instagram, all that shit existed when we were in high school, you know what? We would be using it. You know why? Because our parents would be like, oh, you know, you're being social with your friends. You know what I mean? This has been going on forever. It's just that now the parents don't teach their kids. They don't guide their kids because we were the beginning of the two parent working family. Right. So, you know, mom and dad, you know, were getting home maybe around 5-6 o'clock when you're getting home from school. So you had some time alone. You know what I mean? A lot of kids did, you know, so we were that first generation that this would have been accepted. You know what I'm saying? It's just that now we've moved so far past, you know, where we grew up, to where it's in your pocket. These kids are not as mature because they didn't have that other upbringing. You know what I mean? Of that street upbringing of, you know, when you see a car in the street, you look both ways. You know, that car's going to run you over. He's not going to stop for you. You stop for him. Now they just walk in the middle of the street and, you know, if you better stop for him because, you know, they don't have common sense. Right. We knew not to go talk to the guy, you know, a random guy at the park in a trench coat. These kids, they just walk right up to him. Hey, what's up, fella? You know, and then they, you know, shit happens. Like, we were raised differently to where we could be on our own and survive. These kids can't survive on their own. They can't. They really can't. So I do believe the maturity level of what we had. Well, I could say 100% of what I had in high school. I probably would have bullied, you know, I was a dick in high school, but like fun dick. But, you know, I think the same problems would have happened where kids that got bullied in school would have got bullied even more online. It would have been the same thing, but I think it would have been a little bit more. I do think it would have been better used for good, because we didn't give a shit about taking pictures of our lunch from the cafeteria.
Okay, so taking that into account, okay? What I heard you say was not so the way that the documentary painted this was, there's these big social media companies, conglomerates, that are trying to manipulate you. And we need the government to step in, because this is technically what they're calling for, regulation. What is regulation? Yes. What is regulation? Regulation is government control. And when I hear that, wrong solution to the problem, because they never even mentioned this in the documentary, never. Which is, and again, to me, there's a lot of other things before we clamor for government regulation. There just is. And you touched on one of them, which is, you know, we've changed the whole family dynamic. We're now two parents are now having to work. because we as a society said, women, you are not defined on the amount of children, a good children that you raised. Now you are defined on the career that you choose and how successful you are in this career structured world. This is what we've told women. So no longer now are women raising kids. It's, you know, the system, and it's the school system, and it's nannies, and it's this. Parents are no longer raising their kids. And the documentary never touched on this, okay? But to me, this is a big aspect to this whole problem. It's not just social media. Look, I've said this many times. Companies will sell their own mothers for a profit. This is the nature of business. However, they're amoral, right? And now the documentary point puts it as like, well, we need to put a, you know, we need to put people in there who are going to have, I fear that more than just the empty algorithms manipulating people. I do. I fear people who are going to sit there and not, because this is what it's leading to, Tim. They cloak this and they're like, well, there's a problem. And guess what? We're going to pick certain people to make those decisions for us. This is George Orwell's 1984. This is on our wedding.
84.
Yeah, because they're going to decide what you get to listen to, Tim. Oh, no. Oh, this is indoctrinating you. This extremist right, because that's all they covered, yeah. Dude. They didn't say Antifa. They didn't say BLM, but they did single out. What did they single out in the documentary? They only singled out right extremist groups. They singled out Pizzagate and they singled out COVID deniers. Those are right things. They never said anything about BLM.
So if you look at that, and again, some of the things that I did catch in that movie was like, even when that kid was like going to the, and you know what I call it, because that it looked like all the Antifa guys,
but
right?
they didn't say that.
But
they called it. But this is important to mention.
They said
Tim.
No vote.
But this is important to mention, Tim, because they singled out COVID deniers, and they singled out. Yes. No, they did. They singled out COVID deniers, mm-hmm. and they singled out. What was the other group? The Pizzagate people.
Pizzagate.
They singled.
No, I understand. No,
but
I
they
understand.
Didn't talk about so Antifa or BLM. They didn't say Antifa. They didn't say BLM.
They didn't say their name. They didn't say their names. So, even the pictures in that kid's.
No, but to me, they lost the picture. You got to be honest.
I get that, but I'm saying I did see things that did
Tim,
you a little
you,
to the left. But
you
it was
referenced that based on what you saw. But you think a leftist who has no idea is like, oh yeah, that's the right.
No.
That's the right crazy.
Because they don't know how to watch something.
So this is why I say
they see that. Be like, oh.
But this is why I say that the documentary. was a lie. I would have taken them seriously if they would have put BLM and Antifa in the same level as they did with COVID and Pizzagate, but they didn't. So they're liars.
But the moral of the story is, it is doing it. But again, what does the left always do? The left always tells you that there's a problem, but it's the right's fault. But then it turns out that it's the left's doing, right? So when you can watch this shit, no, hold on. When they say Trump, Russia, Trump this, Trump that, they were covering up their own ass. So when I watch this and I see that, I'm like, they're basically calling out themselves. Because when you're indoctrinating kids, you're basically taking that weak kid, a weak-minded kid. Because again, you're seeing it right now. When I see a weak-minded kid with purple hair going to these riots, taking bricks, throwing them through windows, going to cops, fuck you, blah, blah, blah. Okay, which is what they're doing. Me and you aren't doing it. You know what we're doing? We're going to work. And you know why? We don't get as manipulated. You know, we do get manipulated in certain aspects. Because how many times we said we've gone down the rabbit hole based on a theory or something we read, right? But we don't take it with a grain of salt and go run into a building and shoot because we have a brain. We can decipher the information. You know what I'm saying? But these kids, these college kids, these high school kids, that was the more of the story. And how many times do you see in this last year? Because now everybody went from posting pictures of their kids and food and the love me's, okay, to they became an expert in dancing with TikTok. Then they became an expert scientist because everybody understands how COVID works and the transfer and everything else. Then everybody became an expert in agitating and protesting. now everybody's become an expert in the Constitution for figuring out the Supreme Court. And if you post something, right, how many times have you said, man, I've gotten people fucking say, man, I emailed Nelson, man, you're extreme. I don't like this, you know, because I don't believe in it. And then 6 months later, they started believing in it, right? How many, you know, how many other friends do you have that all they do is post all this dog shit? And if, even if you respond saying, I disagree, you are getting into an argument and you're getting berated by those guys. You know what I mean? They did the left to me with social media goes so crazy, right? Because they get triggered and they're manipulated because they're the ones that need that ding and that validation. So if somebody posts an art, if I post an article and somebody's like, oh, that's wrong, disinformation. Most of the 99% of the time, I will not respond to anybody because that is your opinion. I respect it. If you want to have a normal dialogue, let's have a conversation, but you can't do that because they want to argue and scream at you and right. then tell you go fuck yourself because so, they don't believe.
There's multiple things. So, number one, there's only one side who's been violent. Are there examples of the right being violent? Yes. But compared to the left, it's negligible.
Not even close.
It's not even close. So, but the document, but the Democrat, but the documentary tried to paint it as if it was, and that's where the lie is, Tim. Because let's play this out. What the documentary said, okay, this algorithm is creating essentially silos of people who don't even understand each other's positions. Okay, let's give them that this is happening. So you got people who only watch right wing shit and they are brainwashed on the right. And you have people on the left side who are only brainwashed with leftist things. Let's take the documentary's approach. Okay, and let's play this out. What happens? Yes, it creates divide. Yes, it creates polarization. But polarization is not new to the country. Homie, we fought a civil war on polarized sides. Okay? This is not new, and this predates social media. This is the printing press. This is the Pony Express. This is, you know what I mean? Like so this is not new. Okay? Now
it's amplifying.
Hold on.
It's putting something.
Fine. Let me finish my point. Fine. It amplifies it. Now you've got sides that are completely polarized. I don't consider that a bad thing. I just don't. Okay? You have two polarizing sides because my point is who can persuade the other and who can persuade enough to win elections? Okay? Violence is wrong. I'm not going to advocate for violence, but I'm talking about the polarization and how they made it seem like polarization is okay. I don't give a shit that you have two opposing sides to each other. Who gives a shit? You know what I mean? Like, so two opposing sides. You're allowed to have this polarization. I can believe whatever the fuck. But documentary made it seem like, oh, this is bad. Polarization. Why? It's not. You have two sides who are opposing each other and they're fighting for their ideas. Great. That should happen. Now, here is, now let's look at what the solution, because if you watch till the end and they asked all these people who they brought in, what would you suggest? Oh, well, we need to start regulating them. Okay. And when people use regulation, what do they mean? Let's think about what they mean, Tim. What do you mean? Oh, you mean government now gets involved? Wait, government? So you want government to come in and control the access to your information, to what goes out? Because no, this is indoctrinating. I don't trust government, dude. So if I were to look at it from that perspective, is that their solution to this whole shit is bullshit? It's garbage. This is why I when I finished watching this documentary, I was like, this is complete garbage. They never talked about parents. You know, one person mentioned parents, make sure your kids don't do it. But that should have been one of the major points. People, let's go back to the founding of the country. We need to have a moral society, a society that is not based on feelings, a society that it has a moral foundation on what is good and what is bad. Okay, but the second that you mention this, oh, you're religious. Oh, we
you're crazy.
Yeah, you're crazy. But again, And so, you know, the documentary puts it like, we started seeing this happening at that point. If you go back and you look at when they started eliminating God from schools, it coincides with their... So we can say, oh, it was a social media influence, or it was the elimination of God. When you told a whole generation of people that they could act however they wanted and there was going to be no consequences for there was no moral consequence to your moral choices as a human being. You know, in my opinion, this played a bigger role than the social media influence, because if you had godly people who believe that we are creating God's image and we need to act accordingly, that honestly, in my opinion, this would have had a better role. See, technology is just a tool. It is. Algorithms are just that. They're a tool. However, another thing that the documentary and then one of our friends mentioned in our group chat, what is so vital, is that what they didn't mention is that conservatives are getting censored in social media. These aren't algorithms. These are people sitting behind the console and looking at conservatives and saying, we can't control this. We can't allow this to go out. And so right. This is why I when I looked at the documentary, I said, okay, the first 30 minutes of this was gold. It was, because people are getting addicted to this shit. I'm not going to not acknowledge that. Okay. However, but then they said, and this is what we must do, and this is who's doing it. No, bullshit. It's not just corporations. It's leftists. It's everybody who's trying to influence this. And to me, if you open the floodgates up to anybody who's trying to influence anybody, it's a weak point. It's negligible, because everybody's trying to influence anybody, and whoever's ideas wins, right. They win.
But that's how it conversation happens, right? If you have an idea and I have an idea and we're having a conversation,
right.
My job, what I'm trying to do is, everybody's always trying to convince somebody to see their point and get them to agree. And I firmly agree that this is why they hate Trump even more. Because again, this is an indoctrination. This is one of the biggest indoctrinations, and I've said it from the beginning.
Pause.
Okay.
Tim beat.
Not from a right or left, but.
Hold on. Just real quick. I'm going to let you finish. Trump beat them at their game, dude. And this is why they're mad.
That's right. So this is what I'm saying. If you're trying to indoctrinate people and folk, you know, you want them to see everything that you see, right? Boom. You know, there's systemic racism. There's COVID. You need to wear masks and hate the cops. And you throw this at everybody, right? But then you have this guy over here that's going, no, that's all bullshit. Right. And he's got a platform and he's using that same thing. And people go, wait, then the next person, like a Candace Owens, she's saying, and they're like, wait a minute. She's representing, you know, she's a black woman, say, who's conservative, who's saying this. And they go, oh, shit, wait a minute. Hold on. Let me see what you're saying. Wait, you're saying this, this and this, but she's saying that. But I agree with that. Oh, that's a problem. You know, Cardi B is saying, you know, drop the WAP all over the place. And she's like, "You why don't you use your brain instead of your WAP?" You know, and people go, yeah, that's actually, you know, but you see where I'm going? Like, so if you're trying to indoctrinate a bunch of these kids, so because those kids that are on the front line in all these riots, they're the first ones to go on November 4th if they decide to do something crazy and the people that have been staying at home decide to come out. They're basically using them to create this havoc, because they're an expense if they get what they want. They're a pawn in the big picture. You know what I'm saying? So this is why, like they even said, like, you know, Mr. George Soros, who nobody's allowed to talk about, was really mad about Zuckerberg not locking down Facebook in 2016 and blamed him. So what did Soros do? He infiltrated Facebook. He is now he has his company. One of his companies is one of the Facebook fact checkers. So he has got in there because he felt that Zuckerberg screwed up, and he was bought a shitload of stock and tried getting Zuckerberg out. So I think they came to a compromise, because obviously look at what's going on now. Every, you know, Zuckerberg's all about, you know, I'm gonna tell people about how to vote, and we don't want disinformation. Who are you? How do you know what's true or not? When I see AOC, right, calling for K-pop, to do all that crap they did with. You are now using social media to influence an election.
They didn't mention it in the documentary. They didn't mention that.
Right. They don't mention that. But then you have Trump saying, hey, North Carolina, please make sure you, if you mail in your ballot, go to the polling. So Twitter censored that. He didn't say for the whole country. He said North Carolina. Trump knows the game. He said North Carolina because that's allowed. That's their rules.
Right.
So he was speaking specifically to North Carolina and they censored him. He retweets, you know, then you have the doctors, you know, about hydroxychloroquine. How is Twitter and Facebook and Google in control of what's right information and what's wrong? So they did drop little tidbits saying they can't control disinformation because they don't know the truth.
The documentary didn't even mention that there was human influence in this. The documentary.
But they mentioned the word truth. No, they mentioned truth and disinformation. They go, Google is sitting there trying to say what is truth. And they go, they don't. One of the ladies said, they do not know what the truth is anymore. And this thing got so big. And in my eyes, the only way to stop this shit, Facebook, you need to deplatform. You need to break them up. Google, you need to break them up. Because how is Facebook in control of my social activity with Facebook, but then my other social activity with Instagram, same company, same data, sharing, you know, same things pushing out to all the advertisers. Then WhatsApp, okay? The people I'm calling in my contacts in that social. You are now controlling every aspect of my life. Now, I go on Google to do my research. Okay, so you see all my algorithms and you know how to, you know, do the advertising towards me. Oh, but then I go on YouTube. Same company. Two companies control probably 98% of the data in this world right now. Two companies, Facebook and Google, control pretty much everything. All your information, everything about you, they own. And then you could throw Amazon, Microsoft, but those two, because those are interactive, user interactive. So if you really want to be, if I'm Trump, antitrust laws, break them up. We allowed Facebook to buy everything up, and now they use the same things all over the place. Yeah, it's convenient, but nobody understands the long-term ramifications because now they control everything about your life. So when you go on Facebook, you're like, oh, they're censoring me. Oh, they're shadow banning me on Instagram. Shit, I go on Twitter. It's all the same people because we allowed it. We allowed it as users, right? We allowed it as citizens by not going to our congressmen saying, or congresswomen, or, you know, whatever, saying, this is a concern of mine. They allowed the distraction to distract us from what they were trying to do. And in my opinion, here comes Trump and calling him out on the bullshit.
Okay, let me ask you this question. Do you think the documentary covered that? That the right is being more affected by social media censorship than the left?
No, they didn't go into any kind of censorship. No,
exactly. So this is to me, this is why it's garbage. The whole documentary is garbage. It was, dude. Because the censorship is happening on the right. And all of a sudden, now it's an issue. Okay, because Trump beat them at their game. The conservatives have beat the liberals on their own fucking game, on their own fucking platforms.
And they're better at it.
And they're better at it. And this is why, maybe 5-6 episodes ago, I said, we need to fight these leftist ideologists on their ground, on the social media platforms. We do. Okay? Because we need to, you know, because if it's algorithms, like the documentary said, you know, it's inanimate. Oh, it just happens. They never mentioned that there's somebody sitting back there and fucking censoring conservatives. They didn't mention that. Okay, again, if they would have been honest, you're right, Tim. You said a lot of right points that there's two huge companies who control this information. However, who sits behind it? It's not just computer algorithms. Because if the computer algorithms really just focus on what people wanted to hear, people would want to hear more right-leaning shit because that's where it was headed. But here comes Facebook and here comes Google and they're like, oh my God, we're seeing a move to, we can't have this. But they didn't mention that. And that's why I said, like, now I want to say this. This may be why political discourse on the TikTok platform is being suppressed. And I've been a victim of this, man. I'm telling you. I was getting...
No, we watched it.
I was getting 88,000 likes. Okay? I was moving up. They didn't like it. TikTok didn't like it because there are leftists in there. And you know, we can talk about the dopamine effect. And come on, stop. Now, I want to break it down. I want the documentary, the flaws of the documentary. Okay, because we need to do this. Again, I'm not going to tell you not to watch this documentary. In fact, I would encourage you to watch this documentary, especially if you're right-leaning, because we need to know the arguments of the left. We need to know the arguments of the left because this fight is coming. Now, the documentary, number one, they make ads sound like the evil manipulator of what?
Oh, wait, was that a general question? I thought you were making a point.
No, I'm saying like, what I'm saying is that the documentary said, oh, it's ads. Ads, and you know, we're selling our information. Okay, but let me ask everybody a question, listener. What are ads? Okay? Who are ads for?
A nuisance.
They're for business. No, but I'm saying, like, if you have a business, you want your ad to go to people. You mm-hmm. want your business to go to people. What is a business? Who is now advertising to you on these platforms? They're an organization of individuals selling you a product, right?
It's nothing new.
Who are these individuals? Exactly. It's nothing new. Who are these individuals? People like you and me. They are. Because if you owned a business, you would be selling your business. You would be selling.
Yeah, of course.
You would be buying for eyeballs. Okay. And what benefit is there that people click on the ad, on those ads that are being sold by the companies that we essentially work for? Me and you, we work for companies that buy ad space on those ads. We do. I do. And we get paid. So we can support ourselves, and we can support our families, and we can support our goals and our future.
That's part of capitalism. I mean, advertising's okay. And there's nothing wrong with advertising.
But my thing is that the documentary went there where it was like bad, capitalism bad. No, get the fuck out of here. This is why I tuned out. And again, the first 30 minutes of the documentary, true. The last portion of it, complete garbage. Now, let me get my point across. Because let's think, 500 years into the future, Tim, 500 years into the future, when technology is essentially engraved or intertwined in our biology, dude, would we say that what we are living through right now are essentially baby steps to get to where we're going? We're learning from it, right? We're learning from it because, I know we only think in the present and we only think about right now, but let's think about the grand scheme of time of humanity, and we're here 500 years from now, where essentially we got microchips we are being biologically engineered, or we are reproducing, where we have certain things that are now intertwined in our biology, in our chemical makeup. So the discovery and the development of a lot of these things are contributing to the advancement of civilization just as much as language, right? Catapulted humanity into the next step in the evolutionary process. Because think about this. When humans invented language, right? Because what did we do prior to language? what did we? No, I'm not trying to be funny, but what did we do before language, Tim? What did we do?
Well, they wrote. They wrote symbols. No, you know?
What I'm saying, before writing, before anything, before when we established communication, we could have said, oh, these motherfuckers are fucking, oh, they're going to persuade people to their side now because they're, oh, they got language now. Oh, they got language.
So there's a, there's evolution, right?
Man.
But here's the thing. If so, when we talk about tools, you know, evolution, I think this is a de-evolution to dumb people down for what they want for the next 500 years. That's what I think. I think social media has been turned into a, when they talk about re-engineering or re-indoctrinating, you know, reprogramming, you know, if they can control everything, like I said earlier, if you can control everything that person sees, does, buys, you can tell somebody, go to Amazon and get it. You don't, nobody says, hey, go down to Joe's Hardware. They say, go to Home Depot. And when you open up Facebook, you see Home Depot ads. You're like, oh, it's so convenient. Boom, boom, boom. I order it online. Right? But all you're doing is helping corporate America out, not Joe's Hardware. During the pandemic, what small businesses all closed down, but what stayed open? Costco, Home Depot, Lowe's. So you got Bernie Sanders, you know, bitching about all this, the top 5 billionaires gained so much wealth. Well, because everybody shut shit down, dude. That's not a Trump fault. Now, oh, we got to tax them. No, because everybody in of a certain dollar amount, they all benefit from it. Bernie Sanders definitely had his wealth grow. You know what I'm saying? Nobody, those guys don't go hungry. You know what I'm saying? So I think if social media disappeared, I think society would grow better, faster.
I don't agree with that.
So I feel that people would evolve a lot faster because, you know what? You would have to have a face conversation with somebody instead of living through, oh, let me take this doctored photo of me.
No, I don't know.
I think more people have become dumber from social media. The way we talk, LOL, oh, FOA, you know, everything's an acronym. Everything is just dumbed down. It's dumbed down. There's no intelligence on here.
Any generation would say that about the previous generation. It's evolving. Okay. Now, here's what I will say is that anything without a moral compass can and will become toxic, and history has proven this. So right now we're attacking technology as if it alone is contributing to this demise that you're talking about. Now, the potential for this technology is awesome and it's beautiful. It is, dude. But we have to have a moral foundation if we do intend to remain useful. No, you know, because I hear what you're saying, Tim, and I get the spirit of what you're saying. Human-to-human communication contact is great. I'm not going to deny that. However, we can't deny the beautiful thing about technology. Let me put it this way. I'm out here in Pittsburgh. I can't have human-to-human communication with my mom in Arizona. I can't. I just can't. But technology has allowed me to be able to call and to see her and to, you know, talk to her. It's a beautiful thing. Okay. If I'm off of social media, because the only way that I'm going to talk to her is through physical, I couldn't, you know, I'd go bankrupt going back and forth.
I'm talking about, I talk Facebook.
I know what you're saying.
Zoom. This is
no, but my point is that the, what I'm trying to get at is that technology has played a beautiful thing. If, and when there is a moral foundation, and that's the thing that the documentary didn't cover, as if, you know, as if it's not even worth talking about. And to me, anything can become toxic, Tim. Even freedom can become toxic. Freedom without morality is meaningless. This is the truth, dude. The documentary, again, to reiterate what we've been saying, they used Pizzagate as an example of a conspiracy theory that was generated by social media algorithms. And they showed
how...
Well, no, but what I'm telling you is what the documentary showed. they showed one guy in the videos that they were playing. They showed one guy who went out and tried to kill people at a some.
Yeah, I honestly tuned a lot of that out.
Let me finish my point. Right, but they covered. But this is why I called the
I know they went out of their way to talk. They went out of their way to take a dig at Q.
Yeah.
No, and that they, whole that, and they that also, whole right, yeah.
But they also talked about the whole coronavirus hoax,
yeah,
right, showing that those who oppose it are in some way been, convinced to be crazy. This is what the they didn't cover BLM, they didn't cover Antifa, they are being disingenuous. Netflix. You know, this is the place where, you know, we watch the documentary.
I hear you.
It's in itself. Netflix is a business, dude. They are. This issue of addiction to phones and stuff. And I messaged this to our group chat. I did. It's been going on for years, decades. You remember on the phone, like I remember watching 80s movies, dude. 80s movies where, you know, you had somebody come in and there was a girl on the phone and she's like, oh, and she can't get off the phone because she's addicted to the phone and she can't have a social life because she's on the phone. No, I'm telling you, this has been going on. Like,
no, I know, dude, but everything. So this is my whole point is that there are really intelligent people in technology like us that taking advantage of people that don't know how to use technology, and now they're throwing psychology behind it. They took the same models that worked forever, and then when you want to take it to modern times before Facebook and all that, look at a video game. The same people that invented a video game, how did they keep getting you to put quarters in? I watched a whole documentary when I was in Havasu about the evolution of video games, right? It's pretty cool. But then let's take it another step further. Let's take it to the biggest industry for taking advantage of people's psychology and addiction, Las Vegas, gambling.
Yeah.
Let's take a look at what they did in Vegas. You give a $20 bill, they give you a green chip worth $20. They start dealing cards. If you had to take that $20 bill, if you took a $25 bet and you put it in front, you're going to look at that $25 and go, shit, that's real money. I'm going to pull that off. But if I give you $25 and you give me a chip, that psychology of that chip,
exactly.
I want to stack it, right? Because you can't, when you stack dollar bills, you need a lot. But then they take that whole gambling and that addiction, right? The slot machines, the ding, 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 triggers your brain. And then what do? They take out the clock. Because now if you go to a casino, you will never see a clock inside of a casino because they do not want you to know that 5 hours went by exactly. And that you lost $5,000.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So they took the same principle of gambling and those video games and installed it into the social media and the post and the likes, so, that addiction. They tapped into that same psychology.
Let me ask you a question now. Do you think that this documentary, knowing how the human psychology, this human psyche can be influenced, do you think they would advocate for the closing down in Las Vegas?
Because they're
essentially doing the same thing.
Vegas is technically regulated.
No, but everything that you just said right now about how they manipulate human beings so that they can get human beings' money, because this is what they do. It's still under the law. This is what happens, dude. Would this documentary and these people who sat there in front of the camera, would they say, we need to shut down Vegas because it's playing on the human psyche and we can't allow this?
Well, I said they wouldn't.
Exactly.
I said they wouldn't.
Yeah, exactly.
They would not call for any.
So to me,
they want control. Everything's about control. That's what this is all about.
Right. So to me, when you, again, the first 30 minutes of this documentary is worth watching because it's true. First 30 minutes. The rest of the garbage. So this is why I don't watch Netflix anymore. After today, I'm not watching. And this show is a reason why I don't feel bad. Because to me, this show is just more leftist indoctrination cloaked in, oh, we're just out for your own good.
Yeah.
I don't trust people who tell me we need government involvement for your good. I do not trust you.
Anytime they say government needs to get involved, honestly, the only one thing that government needs to do is change the Section 230, hold them as now they're publishers instead of content, whatever that, so that you can be held accountable. Because yes, conservatives are getting a very not the same shake, because you know what? When you got, like we said earlier in the show, you got leftists saying, we're gonna burn this motherfucker down if they move forward with a nomination and a confirmation, we're gonna burn it down. And then you got AOC using the social media platform saying we need to radicalize. So if I came out and said, Patriots, we need to radicalize against the left and show up in Washington, D.C. and protect the neighbors. Oh, white supremacists are looking to start war.
You know when I'll believe the leftists about how social media is bad? When they leave social media.
Exactly.
As soon as the leftists inspire me, as soon as Netflix inspires me by leaving ads and stopping all this fucking bull, as soon as these leftists like AOC leave social media and inspire me to not, I don't believe any of the bullshit that they're saying, because they're saying that these social media platforms are manipulating us to think bad, yet these same motherfuckers are on those social media platforms trying to influence us. The fuck out of here. You don't believe what you say.
Well, because
fuck you.
They know the game. So by them telling you, like, their whole point is to influence you to go do what they want and do their bidding. Right. And that's where, and that's why conservatives, you got ones that are easy. Donald Trump says jump, they'll jump. You know what I'm saying? They will do whatever, but then you have the ones on the left that
Donald
AOC
Trump
says,
supporters
go burn down building, go burn
are not burning down buildings. They're just not.
Right. Because
that's the left.
If he turned around tomorrow, let me tell you something. If he turned around tomorrow and said, you know what, it's war, go kill him, go beat the ass, damn well they would.
They haven't. They don't. I mean, we can talk about hypotheticals all day, but it's not happening.
Right. But what I'm saying is, anybody can be manipulated if you care for a cause. Okay, if you care deeply for something, you go find it.
That's a
and
hypothetical.
That person, you can talk to 100
Tim,
people.
That's a hypothetical.
No, it's not a hypothetical.
No, because look,
even down to dating a girl. Hold on. Even down to a girl that you might want to date. If you ask 10 people, 9 say no, but the 10th one says, nah, you should do that, you're going to go listen to the one that said 10, because that's the answer you
wanted
to hear.
There is only one side calling for the burning of the country.
I'm not talking about burning down of the country.
But there's only one
listening to the message you want to hear.
But there's only one side who's doing it and whose followers are literally burning down the country. Literally, they're setting shit on fire.
But
what I'm saying is that you said something is like, if Trump did this, all the right would do it. Okay, but it's not happening. So there's no worth mentioning it. The only place that this is happening is on the left. The left calls for the burning down of cities, and they're burning down cities. So we can talk about, the right would do it. Yeah, but the right is not doing it. It's the left who's doing it. So, maybe, Tim, I wouldn't. If Trump said go burn down, I wouldn't burn down city. And I don't know many conservatives who would. They're not doing it right now. And so, it's easy to speculate and say, they would do it. Okay, great, maybe. I'll give you that.
No, I'm not saying every single one.
But
I'm
however,
not every single
the
one,
left
not every
is.
Single liberal's burning down a building. But again, you're saying.
But it's on the left that it's happening. But it's on the left that
it's happening.
It's
happening on the left. Right. But you can't say that it's all left. Just like you can't. You can't.
Homie, but
it's a specific
the scale is like
group
this.
On the left. It's a specific group on the left doing it. It's a specific group. You can't say that the person that goes to work every day like me and you are the same ones burning down a building. They're not. It's a specific group and a specific ideology of the left doing that work.
Right.
You can't blame you. You can't throw a wall in a bucket. You can't.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on this episode of The Salty Show. Find us on all the social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok is here to stay. Oracle. Hell yeah. I'm going to be posting more often. Give us a like, share some of the content, and give us a follow. And we will catch you all next time. Adios.
Wash your hands and wash your ass.
That's good.